cliffcentral.com.
I've got to tell you about Liesl, because if you don't already know about her, this is going to fascinate you. She's not just the host of this show. She's got an incredible story to tell. She's a journalist, an author, a talk show host, a voiceover artist, a producer, a researcher, and a certified Martha Beck life coach. What is a Martha Beck life coach? That I don't know anything about. Can you fill me in on that one?
Hi, Gareth.
Hi, how are you, Liesl? Liesl
good,
Tom,
thank
everybody.
You. Martha Beck basically was the first life coach in America.
Before Tony Robbins and all of those people.
Before coaching was a thing,
yeah?
Martha was a coach.
How old is she? Is she still alive?
She's still alive. I would say she's in a... It's very difficult to guess with these people.
What,
80? Because they seem to age
90?
Backwards.
Okay.
No, she's I would say, 50s, maybe 60s. Yes.
Okay.
And she's Oprah's life coach. She's the Duchess of York's life coach.
Wow.
So Martha Beck is quite well known.
Okay, well, you see, I'm an idiot then, because I didn't know about her. How did you find out about her?
It was very interesting. You know, life takes you on a journey.
Uh-huh.
And my journey, at some point, I taught life skills at the then Technikon Wits.
Okay.
And this word life coaching came up over and over and over again.
Uh-huh.
I later learned about reticular activation. It was that. So
right. This is what happens when you stir up memories and you can imprint someone's memory with certain, you know, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, thoughts.
Absolutely. And,
right.
and you know, when someone tells you about a yellow Volkswagen, you're going to see them in traffic all the time.
Correct.
So this word came popping up. And I thought, okay, maybe there's something in there. Maybe I should investigate becoming a life coach because I enjoyed teaching life skills.
Sure.
And then one day I was listening to an interview on 702. Jenny Cruz Williams was interviewing Martha Beck. And something Martha said just hit me here in my solar plexus. And I knew this one was for me. Because there are so many schools of coaching. I mean, there are some schools, Henley Business School has a coaching course. So some coaching courses uses, you know, reams and reams of forms that you have to fill in. Personality tests.
Yeah.
Martha's way of doing things is far more intuitive. And that resonated
with
me.
What does she do when she meets you the first time, or when she's trying to analyze kind of your personality? And
she doesn't really analyze, but she asks you questions. And then the Martha Beck way of doing things is far more intuitive. Gareth, you know people very well. So you know when someone is putting up a barrier, when someone is trying to divert your attention. You have that intuition. Own it. We are taught to hone that intuition and to use that to help people find their own answers, because coaches do not give advice. We do not analyze.
Mm.
We help people find their own answers to whatever it is that bugs them.
I think everybody in the world could do with either a psychologist or a life coach. Everybody. Because there isn't enough of a support system in families and friends and work colleagues. It's not enough. And sometimes those are not the people that you can share everything with anyway. So you tell your family some things, you tell your friends other things, you tell your work colleagues a whole lot less. I mean, that's how people are. They compartmentalize their lives,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And having a soundboard is probably the most important way we can figure out what it is we want. Now, if you tell your family what is bothering you, families, because they care for you, they immediately spring into action and
try to solve problems.
They try to solve
instead
problems.
Instead of just listening, right?
Exactly. Whereas a coach knows how to listen, but also knows which questions to ask you to find your own answers.
Yeah, you see, that's a very, very major distinction.
Mm.
I'm fascinated in this. We could talk a little bit more about it when we get into what the show is too. But you also wrote a book on Advocate Barbie a couple of years ago called Shattered Lives. No, it did very well. I mean, it was a fascinating book, and I remember she was really the big topic of conversation for a time there. What a disturbing story.
I tell people it's the most horrible book that is extremely well written. I did a good job writing that book.
Yeah, but you hated the experience.
The content, Gareth, was so disturbing. You know, this was actually a way of cleansing myself of all these horrible, horrible things that I had to hear in court. You know what? We were so traumatized sitting in that courtroom, listening to this horrible, horrible, smutty gunk.
Let's try and remind people, because they don't know. I don't mean you have to dig deep into this again.
I'm not going to.
I'm sure you're past it. But do you remember the Advocate Barbie story?
I remember, like, the headlines, not the story itself.
This woman was, she was basically a sex slave to this man.
Yes.
And she had a whole lot of surgery to look like a Barbie doll.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, deep down, she might have been this really empowered, really smart, really capable woman. But she became this depraved lunatic with this guy who she was with. What was his name?
Dirk Prinsloo.
Dirk Prinsloo. And this guy, they were involved in child porn.
Ooh.
It was revolting.
Well, it went so far that she went to children's homes and identified potential victims. And the court heard. And now this is something that I keep on repeating in the book, that this is what was said in court, because she threatened to sue me for writing the book. And I said to her, well, actually to her mother, that we are sticking to what was said in court. Now, what the court heard was that she went out to children's homes
and procured children for him.
And identified, there was one little girl, we used the name Krista for her in court.
Yeah.
She was 11 years old, but she was starting to blossom, to bloom. She had little breasts, and Suzanne said, I want that one. Now, what they did with some of the other children, what very likely would have happened, is they drug these kids.
Oh, my God.
This was said in court. Yeah. Some adults were drugged and sexually abused. So, you know, yes, she was a victim. I fully understand
that. But she was also
that,
a perpetrator.
But she never took responsibility for her role in assaulting, in procuring those kids.
I mean, isn't it just the weirdest thing? Like, across any culture, in any age group, geographic separation, there's just this revulsion in human beings against the abuse of children. It's just innate in us. We just immediately go, ugh, when we hear about these things. It upsets us on some level that a lot of things don't.
And it
like
should.
You hear about, if Vladimir Putin got stabbed to death tomorrow in the Duma in Russia, we'd all go, ah, well, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Mm. If someone got robbed that you didn't like particularly.
Even if it's someone you liked.
But in the case of kids, it's just so upsetting. And this woman and her partner, this Dirk Prinsloo and Suzanne Visser, these two were just the most filthy people.
Mm. I think it's right that we care about children, because they can't protect themselves.
Yeah.
Animals and children. And there were photos. Now, this didn't come out as clearly in court, but there were also animal abuse.
Oh, my God. What horrible people. Are they both in jail now? What's the deal?
She's out.
She's out already?
She's out. Huh. And no, I don't know what she's doing. I'm not.
You don't want to know.
I don't care.
No, exactly.
He's still in a prison in Belarus. There were talks that he was going to be extradited, and then, it was a process. There were talks that he was going to be released on parole, and then they would have had to bring him back to South Africa to stand trial. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then the court in Belarus said they're not releasing him on parole yet.
Jeez, what a book. What an experience to have to go through. You see, this investigative journalism thing is hard as hell.
I have to say that was... I actually had a nervous breakdown.
Really?
Because as a journalist, you have to be able to ask those questions. Oh. How do you feel? I mean, that's just the most innate question. But you want that sound. Mm. You want this person breaking down so you can share it and you can touch people's lives with it. But as a life coach, you have to be open and receptive to people. And those two clashed.
Yeah.
You remember there was a case about a girl, Annika Smith. Her hands were chopped off after she was murdered and raped. And that case, I almost crashed my car after I left her house, because I had a panic attack in my car. And that's when I knew I can no longer be involved in news, because news by its very nature is not good.
No. You're always going to be dealing with the ugly underbelly of humanity and all these terrible things that happen to people.
Yes, and I've seen too many nasty things for me as a coach. It got into my heart.
But the one thing that no one can say to you is you're just some soft woo-woo spiritual, you know, nonsense person. Because if you've been through that stuff, you're there deep down in you, there's a hard edge there somewhere too.
There is.
You can turn that on when you need to.
And, you know, I can be... during our show, I'm always the skeptic, the, you know, prove it, tell me more. Whereas Shemaine... Hello, Shemaine.
Hey, Shemaine.
Shemaine is more the okay, I can believe this.
She's like open-minded.
And, there we go. Thank you.
Yeah. Are you saying I'm close-minded?
No, I've listened to the show, and you are the one who goes, all right, bring your stuff. Let's hear it. Let's see what you have to tell us. I'm not going to judge.
Mm-hmm.
And the role that Liesl then plays is that she questions stuff, mm-hmm. which is good. So it's a good combo. How did you two meet?
She was forward. She I produced for a long time. For television, and this was kind of I'm kind of nervous.
Don't be
well,
nervous.
Shemaine, I was
being
so out of breath
because
I heard Gareth talk about our crystals, and I thought, shit, I have to go fetch those crystals. And the next moment, he calls me in, and I'm completely out of breath. So sorry about that bad start.
Is that what it was?
We're going to bring the crystals in here.
Absolutely,
we need
great.
To bring them in here, and our spray. We brought some spray as well.
Before you even start, Shemaine, let me just tell everybody, because there are a lot of people who might not know what an illustrious career you have had. I mean, both of you are very accomplished, entirely apart from the show. And Shemaine has been in the entertainment business since 1994. She's an actor, a voice artist, presenter, producer, writer, director, even a hair extensionist.
Yes! That is so amazing! I went to China, I went to the UK, so that is my great achievement. And look at me now.
And you, this is interesting, when I saw you describe your life path, you said, having failed so much that lying down for too long is not an option. I mean, do you feel you failed so much?
I fail constantly. We were having this conversation with my son and his wife the other day. And I said, I fail more times than I want to actually remember. But what I have learned, though, is that we need to encourage one another. And that's one of the lessons I actually learned here at Cliff Central, that you cannot go forward unless you tried and tried and tried ad nauseum. So, yes, I fail more than I succeed, but
I hope we're not making you nauseous.
No, but the thing is, when you get it right, oh my God, you get it right for the longest stretch.
So you two, how did you find each other and decide to put the show together?
Do you want to go?
No, I'm going to leave that to you, Shemaine, because I told the story. You know what, Gareth? I told the story to someone the other day, and while I was telling it, I was thinking, shit, I wonder if this is the way Shemaine recalls. Tell it, friend.
All right. So we're at this thing, and, you know, wrapping up, and that time we both still smoked, and she said, come, I want to talk to you. Let's sit here. And she sat me down on the grass, went out of the building. She says, I want to be your friend.
Oh.
And that was how many years ago?
Sure,
good few
years
ago.
And
I said, this girl is nuts, but okay. You know, again, that open-minded thing. I was like, okay, let's see where this goes. And it's one of my most beautiful and treasured friendships.
You know, as I said to you, I'm very intuitive, so I immediately know when someone resonates with me, whether I'm going to be friends with
them. So for you going up to her and saying, I want to be your friend, isn't like if you went up to a complete stranger, you had no friend, you went, I need a friend. What you were saying is, I can tell there's something about you that I need, and there's something about me that you might need, and this is going to be a good combo. So for you, it was just being honest.
Yes, it wasn't like I needed friends. No. I mean, I have great friends.
Yeah.
But there was something in her that resonated with me that told me we have a path to walk together.
Wow. Look at that. No wonder you're putting crystals all over my studio.
Sounds like you want to be my friend, calling me into a white van and twiddling your fingers. Yeah, yeah.
I know. No, it wasn't that.
But this show, you know, I'm a total skeptic, and I'm very cynical about stuff, and I need proof and evidence and all of that nonsense. But the fact is, like, to not have a space in your life for what you can't see or what you can't hear, what you can't always understand, is sensible. That's the intelligent position. if you imagine that everything that is practical and that there is evidence for is all there is, you're actually being really ignorant.
Mm-hmm. And life would be really boring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, we're going to do some astral traveling now, or we're going to sit with horoscopes all day.
Seance.
But nobody, human, no mammal, ape like us can know everything. None of us.
Thank you.
Not even the greatest scientist who's ever lived or the greatest spiritual teacher that's ever lived. We're all just apes trying to find our way on a planet that seems sometimes to really not want us on it. And some of the answers might be ridiculous at first glance.
Yeah, it is actually.
This is what you guys look into, right?
Yeah. We try and get answers. I don't know whether we look into it, or are we just like curious to find answers to make life bearable, you know, because sometimes you need those abstract things, that non-tangible thing. Some people call it faith, where you can go to, you know, and kind of rest in that.
And we also try to give people different options and different answers, because I do think that as much as there are people out there who say there's absolutely one life, this is it, nothing beyond it, I do think we all have a sense somewhere that what if this isn't all there is? And I always say, you know what, I don't care if you believe in pink elephants. I just want to know more. So we ask those questions.
Yeah, and what you were saying earlier about intuition, I mean, this is a big deal. There are people who believe that they have intuitive powers and they get a feeling from somebody. Now, that's not something that you can put down to the five senses.
No,
it's
you can't.
Sixth one. And when you deal in that world, it's really for people who are purists and scientists, it's opinion. But for you, it's a feeling. It's a real thing. It's something that you actually experience in a physical sense.
Isn't that everyone's experience, though? Everyone goes at some point, I fucking knew it.
Yeah.
You know? And so
that's
not
my type of church.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not woo-woo. We just don't want to acknowledge, you know, because we go like, well, you know, it's not tangible. You know, but essentially we're all beings where we work beyond what we can see and what we can touch. So we all go there. And there's nothing strange about it. We want to make it into the spiritual experience.
Yeah.
It's nothing. It's just we're wired, you know, to...
You're curious. That's all you are. You're just curious. Now, when you come to choosing guests, how do you decide who you're going to talk to?
I mean, first come, first serve. Really.
Because I would imagine it's such a wide field.
Do you know, it is wide, but sometimes you find you need someone who can talk, actually. Because a lot of people know what they're doing, but it's still daunting to talk publicly.
Yeah, to get in front of a microphone and to express yourself in a clear and concise way is difficult to do if you're used to working quietly in a room, one-on-one with someone, maybe life coaching, or, you know, you're a spiritual healer, or you're a sangoma, or you're one of those things. Then maybe being on a broadcast medium is hugely intimidating.
Yes, especially if the gift of the gab isn't your gift.
Yeah.
So we've had cases where we spoke to people and decided we can't put them on air. We don't want to do that to our guests.
You don't
want to
traumatize your guest.
Not unnecessarily. I mean, if it's...
See, my whole point is to traumatize my guests.
You see, that's the difference.
You need the soft approach sometimes, and that's why you have so many different...
I mean, are you, Charmaine, are you religious?
No. You know what? I moved from a space of...
How did you grow up?
Okay. It's too checkered. You can take the whole
life. I want to know.
So I grew up kind of like... It was kind of sketchy. Okay, my mother died when I was 5. My father by then lived in Europe. He left when I was 3. So I grew up with family. So it was like, you know, then I'm in the Karoo, then I'm in Cape Town, then I'm... So it was like that, all those little... pieces. So needless to say, my head was all over the place. I wasn't like a normal little girl. So I went from cursing God to really being religious and doing missionary work, to going, sorry for those people who are going to listen to this, but at that moment I went, like, the church is fucked. Because this God that I know does not operate according to what the church says. Uh-huh. And so I started finding different ways of looking into alternate ways of healing internally. So, yeah, so no, I'm not religious, but I think I look for stuff that can enhance life spiritually. And you know what? Started off with just me, but now it's like, if I can get this, so many other people can get this.
So how do you know if you're warm or you're cold? Because it sounds to me like it varies from person to person almost, and your spiritual experience is very different to anyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know if you're on the right track, or does it not matter?
You know, I never thought of that, but I feel comfortable in the way that I do it now, because now it's without judgment. Mm. I actually look at people and I go, that could be me. So there's no one that I look at that I think is inferior. And it goes to all the little crevices. It goes to my racist spaces, you know, where I go like, okay, that's a race thing, you know. And then I go, oh, let's see, you know. Or I go, oh, that's a male hate space.
Wow.
And then I go, oh, let's see.
This is some self-actualization you're talking about. What you're saying is that you are able now, and maybe you get it right 90% of the time.
Who knows? 50
maybe. Mm-hmm. But you're able to stop yourself before you think along racist, sexist, mm-hmm. bigoted lines. Because we all do it, right?
Yeah.
We all just have to learn to switch that off and be a better person.
Yeah.
Well, not switch it off, but turn it down.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to have that noise in my head.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yeah.
But you've managed to do that.
I'm learning still, but I damn well know that the way people are amazing if you give them space to let them see you.
Because you're really fascinating to me in not that you're just talented and you've done all this stuff in entertainment, but you've got an interesting sort of, you're at a crossroads of so many different things. Like you the first time I met you properly was on Casper's show. And you and he converse in Afrikaans the whole time, and you
do
you
know.
Well, yeah, and so I'm looking at you, I'm thinking, yeah, she's Afrikaans, and uh-huh. then I think, well, but she's also black, and then uh-huh. she's also got this European side to her, and uh-huh. you know, you're a very difficult person to pin down according to those stereotypes,
which is lovely for me.
I think it's fantastic.
You know, it was irritating in the beginning because I tried to answer everyone. Now I don't anymore.
You don't have to.
No. I'm in my 50s. God knows. You choose some battles. You go like, I will indulge you or I won't.
You're like a much younger looking, better looking Dionne Warwick.
No.
Don't you think? She does look like Dionne Warwick. Yes. And I love Dionne Warwick. Yes. I think she's fantastic. So
I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's a compliment. Trust me. And you, Liesl? I mean, do you also feel the same way spiritually, religious? What's your position?
You know, I believe that God came and gave us love. Mm. And then humans, or, you know, if that falls within your frame of reference, the devil came and he mixed it up and he created dogma and religion. I do not subscribe to any religion. I lost my religion the day my grandfather... I grew up in a very religious family.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was an apostolic pastor. Many of my uncles and aunts are.
Those are the ones who had the brimstone and the sulfur and the sin and the
but
pain
also
and
the
hell.
Joy, you know. They also had the clappy, the happy clappies.
It's nice of them to balance that with a bit of joy.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. There has to be some balance.
Burn in hell, but let's sing a song first.
And clap.
Twisted puppy.
But what happened was my best friend is Muslim.
Uh-huh.
And my grandfather said to me, she's going to hell. And then I thought, you know what, screw that. If she's going to hell, then I want to be with her.
Wow.
And then I started looking at different ways of finding spirit without the religion and the dogma.
Yeah, do you think that that's because religion is a man-made thing?
Absolutely.
And what you guys seem to have common ground on is that feeling, that intuition that you spoke about mm-hmm. earlier, that spirituality that Shemaine referred to, that is, you either have it or you don't, but it's not something that's constructed.
I believe that everyone...
You feel things.
I feel, and that's one of the tools that Martha Beck teaches you. She calls it the body compass.
Yeah.
And off air, I'll show you how it works.
All
but
right.
It basically, when your body compass tells you, yes, then you know this resonates with me. It doesn't have to resonate with anybody else. It's not their life, it's your life. And I believe all religions have at its very core the same principles and love. Love is
so what
religions
is,
are
what's
about.
The difference between the body compass and the moral compass?
Our moral compass.
What's the difference?
Our moral compass.
Oh my God, is that, how many more do you have?
What's the difference?
The whole day.
A moral compass.
Moral compass.
Is that's something that's influenced by the way you were raised, the way you internalize the rules of society.
Yeah.
Whereas your body compass is actually your soul's way of communicating through your body. Our bodies cannot lie. If you've ever, and now this is something I believe. You don't have to believe
it. Sure, go
see that,
bring it on.
But, you know, if you've been for kinesiology and those things, they show you your body cannot lie. If you tell a lie, you cannot hold firm with your arm, and I'll show it to you.
All right. Huh.
So what the soul does is it uses your body to tell you whether this is right or wrong for you, because our egos and our minds are so busy the whole time.
Yeah.
And a moral compass is located in the ego and the mind. A body compass is, although it uses your body, it's located in the soul.
Wow. What do you think happens when we die?
I personally think that we go to a place where we review, because I believe that life is like a classroom. We have lessons to learn. And when you die, you go to review. Did I learn these lessons?
Hmm.
You have a time of rest, and then you choose. Do I want to come back and repeat my year, or do I want to move on? I mean, I don't know. It's not really my business to know, but that's what I think.
Hmm. What do you think, Shemaine?
I'm kind of like on the same vain as her, but can I just quickly, we are looking for someone on Beyond Ears and Eyes who can speak to us about a near-death experience or near-death experiences. So if anyone is listening, come on now, let us
yeah,
know.
Yeah, these ladies are looking for, they want to go back, they want to go back into your memory and find out what it's like to almost die.
Yeah. So lots of years ago, I discovered Michael Newton. And he went into soul spaces. So you know where you go, like you get regression for past lives, and he accidentally came to a space where he found life between lives, and that's the life. I know it's
just explain what that means.
So life between lives is the between physical lives. So I believe in reincarnation, as people call it. So a physical life, and then your life where you die, and then you come back to another physical life.
And in between, your soul's just wandering around.
Well, I don't know about wandering around. I would prefer to think of it as resting, you know. And if wandering comes with it, then yeah. But the way he described it is kind of like you go to a place of where you review things, you know, about your lives, and it's in a place of rest if you need to. Some people go for longer than others. So if you were hurt a lot in this lifetime, you go to a place where it's kind of like you get medically seen to.
Yes.
And would you call that heaven?
We call it all. I would call it heaven, only because language can't. For me, it's so limiting. So I would obviously, you know, because heaven for me is that place of utopia. It's like all is good and
everybody has a different kind of heaven in mind, right? I mean, for some people it would be listening to music. For some people it would be eating nonstop and never getting fat. For some people it would be just endless amounts of praying and worship.
Singing the whole day.
But you're talking about the physical now.
Well, of course, because I'm in a physical body. This is the best way for me to relate to reality.
To that. Okay.
So I'm not going to fight with you about that stuff, because I actually think, as I said to you earlier, none of us have all the answers.
Yeah.
And your position of let's ask questions is the most sane, intelligent place to start.
To come, yeah. And I mean, I appreciate that.
Can we play a quick game of bullshit or not? Okay. I'm going to ask you about a couple of things.
Go.
All right. First question, bullshit or not, homeopathy. What do we think, ladies?
Not
bullshit.
There's some truth to it.
Okay. Even though medical science is completely opposed to this, and in America, for example, now they're going to put warnings on homeopathy medicines that say, this does not work by law.
We've seen cases where it works. So, you know.
Okay. All right.
So they should go to the FDA and put that same shit on there, because some of that stuff also doesn't work.
All right. So there we go. Homeopathy, not bullshit. Astrology. Horoscopes.
Absolute truth.
Really?
Bullshit.
I believe,
you say it's true, Lisa, and you say it's bullshit.
Well, some of it.
I believe we are all a puzzle, and astrology is definitely a part of that puzzle. I'm not saying it's the ultimate truth, but there is some truth in it.
Yeah, some truth. Yeah, some of it,
so,
some not.
Okay, you guys are keeping a very open mind here. So far, nothing's complete bullshit. How about demonic possession? Is it bullshit or not bullshit?
Talk about that, because you never know, because to everyone that's a different story. To me it's demonic as a Christian. To someone else it's a dissociative disorder, which is multiple personality disorders. To an African person from Africa who's worked with different types of rituals, it could be an ancestor coming through. So hey, I'm not going to go into that one.
I would love to say it's bullshit, you know, because I don't want to. I don't want to believe in things like that. But there have been cases reported where things like this happened. So once again, you know, you can call me a draadsitter if you want, but no. I'm not gonna call bullshit on it.
Do we believe in ghosts, bullshit or not bullshit?
Yeah, they so there. Yes.
Ghosts. You've seen ghosts.
Yes.
You've experienced ghosts.
Haven't you?
No.
Okay. I had some experiences that I can chalk up to, you know, the woo-woo.
Okay.
I saw a little girl once.
Uh-huh. Oh, you see.
All right. No.
No, this is not creepy.
Was she standing in a sheet on
no,
the road?
No, this is not creepy
bring it,
at
bring
all.
It on. Let's go. Let's go.
This is not
Let's
creepy
do this.
At all.
Come on, ladies.
As in Woolies.
Frighten the hell out of
and this.
No.
This is in Woolies. And there was
a ghost in Woolies?
And wait now, and there were these three little girls playing. So two of them and one, and the one was dressed in a really old-fashioned way. And I was like, how come she looks so different to the two others? And then this woman went to the counter.
Yeah.
And then when she left, she just left, and they were standing in front of me. She left with just the two, and I was like, where's the other one? She's like, which other one? There was just two.
Oh,
that
God.
Was freaky. I know. I stood like this. I was like,
Stuart, you see, that's your problem. I would already be out the door.
But I didn't
never go back.
No, but I didn't realize it at the time, because it's three little girls playing. One with a, you know, like a
weird
little old fashioned
outfit. Yes.
Wow. Yes, frilly and checkered little skirts.
Were the other two, like, be interacting with the other one?
I didn't check how they were interacting, but the three of them were
together. Wow, they were all sitting together, and these other two, you're insane.
Yes, certifiably, you know.
Right. Crystal healing.
You go.
Once again, I wouldn't call bullshit on it. It's stones resonate at a certain frequency.
All right.
And our bodies also resonate at a frequency. And those stones, if there's something wrong, can put back whatever is missing.
What does that mean? Sorry, like a lot of people now use that. Oh, your energy radiates
resonation
on a,
and,
yeah, vibrations.
The resonance.
What does that mean?
Have you ever, especially in winter, walked and shocked yourself? Or you touch someone and it shocks. There's like
static.
That is part of your energy. Your energy field is taking up the static electricity. And then So we all have different bodies. We have an etheric body and then your mental body. So there are people who can see these energy fields.
Mm-hmm. These
and
the chakras
they,
and things?
They vibrate. Yes, your chakras are part of your energy.
Chakras. I like
sounds
that.
Sounds sassier.
No.
I have chakras.
I like that.
So your energy field vibrates, it resonates. In fact, look, I'm not a scientist, but I know that we are all made up of energy particles and molecules, and those things also no stop with that nonsense. those particles also vibrate at a certain frequency, and the only reason we can see it is because they vibrate slowly, I think.
No,
I'm
well,
not a scientist.
I don't know if this is pseudoscience or if it's science, but we do know that the atom itself consists of positive and negative charges. The electrons that are spinning around the nucleus of the atom are in clouds, and that there's vibration. We're still not sure, for example, about whether or not a light particle is a particle or a wave. And if it's a wave and a particle, which a lot of scientists are positing now, then as a wave, it has a certain frequency and a certain amplitude. All waves do. And they say that at the heart of it, all matter is probably wave, and therefore is probably vibrating at a certain different kinds of frequencies and different kinds of amplitudes. But that might be what it is. So, I mean, that's maybe
thank
where there's
you. Something. You have just explained so much more concise what I was trying to say. But you know what I find incredibly exciting is all these new technologies, especially in neuroradiology, is showing that we can measure the brain activity. They can show you
brain
what
waves.
You are thinking.
Yeah.
And that really excites me. We want to speak to someone who measure brain waves and can tell you all kinds of wonderful things about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, Double D, who's clearly a cynic, says, no offense meant here, but please ask Liesl why all life coaches speak in the same tone of voice that she does.
Kind of like a TED talk.
None offense taken. You know what? I was told when I wanted to move from news to more infotainment, teaching, entertainment,
softer. Not this
hardcore, I was told,
nasty. Yeah.
I was told that I sound too newsy and I will never make it. So thank you. I take that as a compliment. For me, it means I have gotten rid of this news tone.
I love that, but I liked it when you did the news. Just do the news for us quickly. Just say, tell me a news. Just do it like you're doing a news report, because I've forgotten how that sounds with your voice.
The headlines
voice.
At the top of the
headline.
Hour.
Let's say, this morning, Jacob Zuma has made a mess again, and he's asked someone to come in and clean it up with toilet paper. Are you ready? Let's go.
President Jacob Zuma is in trouble again, as he has fucked up and...
She can do it with her eyes closed. That was beautiful.
Just slipped right into it.
Wow.
I sat up.
We all started taking you very seriously. Not that we don't the rest of the time.
Now, if you delivered your show like that.
Now, ladies, what about the idea that some people, I mean, you said you would believe in reincarnation. Do you believe in that too, Liesl? We come back to learn lessons. Do you come back an infinite number of times, or do you sometimes reach the point where you've learned all your lessons and now you can go to heaven? I mean, how does it work?
The way it makes sense to me, and I'm not saying this is the ultimate truth, but the way I understand it is you progress, you learn your lessons, you progress, you sometimes slip back, but there is a progression.
Okay.
And then eventually you get to a point where you can decide, do I want to move on to whatever is beyond there? I have no idea what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to come back and help other people achieve actualization?
Wow. In form of like a guru?
Yes,
or?
Exactly. Oh. They
do you think you choose the body you come back in if you're a reincarnated soul?
Yes. And that is one of the reasons why astrology for
why
me
would,
personally
why would my
makes sense.
Beautiful soul have chosen this hideous body.
I was like, why didn't I get the Idris Elba choice?
Because this body, this look, this personality offered you the opportunity to learn certain lessons. I believe we choose our parents because their DNA allows you to learn certain lessons.
I could have chosen richer ones.
Yeah, well.
Well, you didn't.
You obviously had to learn a lesson there.
Yeah.
Is this where the term old soul comes from?
I have no idea, but I suspect so.
So if you've been through many lives,
if you have, yeah,
been
so
an old soul.
I suspect that. That
do you have
be.
Any inkling what you might have been in a previous life, Shemaine?
We've had this conversation on our show before.
Yeah, tell us.
We have. Do I have to go into
I
that?
I want to know. Yes, people okay. People are asking. They want to know.
Okay. I don't know. I'll tell you the one that I there are a couple. God, yes. Okay.
Choose the most interesting ones.
The most interesting one was when I was adopted. But apparently, there were traders and I was one of those interesting little
girls.
You
were a child sex slave.
No. Oh. I was.
This is not
I was the,
shattered
yeah,
lives.
Probably, the product of one of those. And so I was adopted. So
how long ago was this, do you think?
I don't know.
Do you know what the environment was?
Yes,
you in
do.
The desert in the.
Yes, it was a deserty type of place.
Okay.
Yes, and you know, like you could see the buildings, but small buildings up into the, what do you call that thing, a mountainous area?
Yeah, yeah, sort of on the hillside.
Yes,
yeah.
Roads were very narrow, very dusty. The house that I lived in was very small, and very dark. It felt like it was mud or built in the earth.
So you were the product of like a slave and a master relationship, and you grew up, you were adopted in this desert place. I'm just trying to put the pieces together.
Yeah, something we roughly put like that. Yeah.
And what kind of things made your life that life interesting? Do you remember anything else? I mean, have you done past life regression therapy? Mm. And okay, so this is how you know.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from that little girl?
That I am with a lot of the people who were there in this lifetime.
Oh, really?
Yes. Some were children. One was a husband. Two were children. One was my mom. But she's almost my mom in this life, but not quite. She's actually my mom's sister.
Oh.
So I refer to her as my mother. So that.
But she was in the previous life.
She was in a previous. And
we should get the Home Affairs Department, because all these people are illegal immigrants, effectively, in our country.
It?
Yeah, shouldn't be here.
Yeah, so, but.
Wow.
There's that whole train of thought that you choose who you come back with. And the people that you come back with are the people that, you know, have decided they cluster together. So we all teach one another our individual lessons. So. Like,
Sorry, and that's where the idea of soulmates come from. Now, this romantic notion that a soulmate is someone you marry and love forever, that's not quite it. Soulmates are part of your soul cluster.
So they don't have to come in a romantic
way. No.
My brother is one of my soulmates. I knew at the moment.
Did you say to your mom's sister that we were in a previous life together?
I never told her that. I never told her that.
She might have had her committed.
She might have, but
I mean, I would,
you know,
pick up a weapon if someone came up to me out of nowhere and said, listen.
She knows I'm a little odd. So she goes like, okay, you're a little strange. So we'll just leave it. But I have never told her this, because it's such a personal thing that you do it for your own self. You don't really do it to let other people know. So, yeah.
May I quickly add one more thing to the bullshit or non-bullshit list? Mm-hmm. Law of attraction.
Yeah.
People who say,
what
when
you, think
you
of
spiritually
that?
You're drawn visualize, to yes.
What do you think of that?
I think there's truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on how you do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the book The Secret is only about attracting material wealth. I haven't read it. I was told this and it immediately put me off. Because if your only reason for looking at something as wonderful as the law of attraction, of almost magic, is to attract material wealth, then you are actually wasting it. It's wasteful.
Also, you know, you attract on the level that you vibrate.
Ooh,
so,
girl.
Okay. say, look, if you, let me put it like this. If you're just freaking negative, you know, you just like freaking everything is a chore.
We all know someone like that.
Messy, everything is bad. You just, you know, you have that, but you want joy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. So, you know, and so you have to align with what you want. You have to mentally actually go there.
So karma is another thing that you guys would have opinions on then.
Yes. That bitch.
That bitch, karma. Because what you're saying to Sia now is what you put out is what you'll get back.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You got to tune yourself into the good vibes to get the good vibes back at you.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you have to put in something there.
Yeah.
It's available, but you have to put in something. Say you want to achieve something. You go, I'm just going to sit on the couch and I'm going to get that thing in 3 years. I'm going to drive in my Merc. I'm going to do this. But you weren't proactive.
Mm-hmm.
No, man, it doesn't work like that. And that is that law of attraction is you walk towards it. It comes to you. So there's a nice little synergy, but you've got to put in some effort.
Yeah, the Arabs have a saying, trust in God, but tie the camels. You have to do the work.
Trust in God, but tie the camels.
They always
tie
have to. It's always got to be about the camels. But it's like that old joke of the guy who he says to God, you know, please, 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 can I win the lottery? And he prays and prays and prays and he prays and prays and prays, and then the lottery results come up on the TV, and he's hoping and praying. He's going, God, please let me win the lottery. And then the numbers come up, and he goes, oh, those are not my numbers. And God goes, will you buy a ticket and meet me halfway?
You know? See, absolutely. You have to do the work.
Well, I'm very pleased that you ladies are here, because you're part of what we're trying to do is to show off a whole lot of different points of view, to give people a place where they can share their stories, to talk about experiences and ideas and figure out some meaning in all of this. And if you are playing your part, which I really believe you are, then I'm so happy that you could do it here with us.
Thank you for having us. Really. I have to say, some people ask, what's it like at Cliff Central? And I'm going, you cannot get a better work environment. You can't get a more supportive work environment. You can't get a more freeing kind of environment to work. I mean, this is like the best place ever.
But you've seen how mad it gets, and yes, especially on a Friday. I mean, you see Dave Levison playing with his genitals outside. Then, of course, John T. arrives and does that on air. And then Casper comes in, and you know how crazy that show is.
I know. Don't tell me about it.
How did you meet him?
Long ago, did a couple of interviews with him. So I went to interview him for a couple of things, and you know. And
you ended up being friends. Because you're friends.
Then, yes. Oh. Well, I don't know if Cassie will call me his friend, but.
He has. He said that to me, and he doesn't say that about a lot of people.
Okay, well, then we're friends, yes. But, you know, sometimes you don't want to be, you know.
Presumptive.
Yes.
But presumptuous. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we're out of time. I could have spoken to you two for another 2 hours and not got bored. I mean that. That's just always fascinating to talk to people who have just such an ability to be open. Mm. And I wish more of us were like that, because we'd have less reasons to fight with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Mm. Totally.
Yeah, so keep spreading those good vibrations of yours.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Jermaine Harris and Liesl Tom, everybody. CliffCentral.com.